Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Follow us on social media, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. It's nice to have you back, Matt, here. We had a lot going on this weekend, and I talked yesterday about the two wins, the win against the Hawks and the loss against the Pistons, kind of wrapped up some good things and some bad things that I saw. But I want to start the show off with something interesting that ESPN had put out there. It was a top 25 players in the NBA right now under 25. So that's the first thing I want to get into today. But we're going to do This Week in Bulls History for you guys, kind of give you a little bit of an insight of what's been going on with some of the guys that have been getting extended playing time over the last 2 weeks, where we see the Bulls season ending here, and some high notes and low notes from there, and so much more. But Matt, how are you doing? And what did you think about this top 25 under 25? And was there something big and notable that was missing from that list?
Yo, what's up, Jordan? Thanks for holding things down for me yesterday. I had a long weekend down in Houston, Texas, and boy, is it much more pleasant and warm down there than it is. We're sitting here recording this on Tuesday, and it is snowing. Big, chunky, ugly snowflakes in Chicago. Some people think those big snowflakes are beautiful, but when they're coming down on March 13th, I'm like, you know what? Enough. Funny, kind of like ESPN's young player, you know, Forbes 30 under 30 list or 40 under 40, that kind of thing. I mean, to me, I think the thing I have the biggest reaction to is that I mean, you could make a case that maybe Zach LaVine got snubbed or, you know, should have been on the list. You could also make the case that maybe he doesn't deserve to be on that list, given the recency bias of the fact that he missed the bulk of this season because of recovering from an ACL. He's sort of not fresh in people's minds. You know, Lauri Markkanen was left off of a similar list of rookie NBA studs this season because of his recent slump. But to me, the thing that I like most about this list being a story is that Zach LaVine was asked about being left off the list, and his quote was, "I don't give a damn." Because to me, that tells me that Zach LaVine is not worried about the little things, and you know, maybe that's something that he's keeping in the back of his mind, and maybe it's a chip on his shoulder that he will use to motivate himself, and maybe it's not. But if he's a guy who, as you and I have talked about numerous times throughout the show, is a guy who is ideally going to become a leader of this team in some capacity, you don't want him wasting his mind and his time and his thoughts on something as trivial as a random list doled out there by ESPN. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think it's pretty funny. So if you didn't see this list, it's formed from three pretty good basketball minds from ESPN. That's Bobby Marks, Kevin Pelton, and Chris Herring. They did their 1 through 25, where I thought the first thing that surprised me, not only just Zach LaVine being off this list, but Lauri Markkanen being as high as 14 and as low as 24 on this list. There was some notable names on here, and I kind of cringed at when I looked at it. I was like, really? Like, Chris Herring had Tyus Jones at number 24, same as where Bobby Marks had Lauri Markkanen at. Fred VanVleet made the list at one point, but I feel like Zach LaVine got forgotten about at this point. He's only played, what, 22, 24 games with the Bulls. He's been gone for a year off that ACL injury. Things weren't really figured out when he was in Minnesota, too. So I feel like with all the young rising talent in the league, he just kind of got overshadowed. And the funny thing is you brought it up. Zach LaVine said, he's like, oh, I wasn't part of that top 25. Like, you guys like talking about players in top 25, under 25. I wasn't a part of that list. He's like, oh, I guess I'm not doing something. I guess I'm not doing my job out there. So maybe this is a little bit of added motivation for Zach LaVine as we end the season here. I think if they reevaluated the list and they look at what Zach LaVine maybe could be in the future, because that's really what this ranking system was. It was what these players are going to do in terms of what their future value is in the NBA. I was very surprised, very, very happy that a lot of people around the league think that Lauri Markkanen is going to be special being a part of this list with some of these great names like Giannis at number one, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Karl-Anthony Towns, Brandon Ingram, Donovan Mitchell, Nikola Jokic, Kristaps Porzingis, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, Gary Harris, Bradley Beal. I could go on and on, but that was the top 14, 15 players on this list. So it was encouraging to see Lauri Markkanen and the praise that he is getting, although he has struggled just a little bit over these last 2 weeks. Nice to see that, but I'm pretty shocked about Zach LaVine, and I guess this is opening my eyes to what everybody else nationally thinks about Zach LaVine. I don't know. Has your feelings dropped off at all a little bit, or are you still just kind of going to say, you know what, we'll wait till he gets that big contract, see what he does this summer, and then moving forward in the next 2 years, we need to see some significant steps taken by Zach LaVine? Or are you a little bit worried now going into the summer?
I have a little bit of hesitation and a little bit of worry as far as where LaVine stands with some of the other young talent in the league right now. And as far as the list, I mean, like, maybe there are some guys that you could sub in LaVine for if you really wanted to, but none of them stand out as egregious to me as far as, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe LaVine didn't make this list and X or Y or Z player did. As far as how that relates to my concern about the players Zach LaVine is trying to become moving forward, I think they're really unrelated. I mean, Zach LaVine, Bulls fans are hoping that he can become a top-tier caliber player, ideally as he still ascends into his prime years, an all-star caliber player. And what that has to do with the rest of the other young players in the league right now is irrelevant. I mean, I have concerns about Zach LaVine's game, specifically on the defensive end, because he is, what we've seen thus far in a Bulls uniform, still completely lost on that end. I have concerns about how he will fit into the moments of being the primary ball handler playing alongside Chris Dunn. That's something that you and I have talked about recently. So yeah, I have concerns about what exactly his ceiling is, and as you said, how that will relate to what kind of contract he demands from the Bulls and what kind of contract the Bulls grant him this offseason. But as far as the lists, like LaVine said, I could not care less.
I see, to me, like, I like it because it brings up conversation. It brings up some debate. And, like, it's kind of laughable when they put Markel Fultz on this list and the dude's played what? You can count the number of games in your two hands. And you don't even, I find it hard. Like, I know everybody has differing opinions, but I find it very hard to believe that guys like Fred VanVleet, who's had a really nice year in Toronto, is better than Zach LaVine in terms of future projections. Like, we're not even talking about just this season. We're talking about future projections in the league. So it for me, I take it with a grain of salt, like I do with everything that I read, opinions that I see on the internet about Bulls players or players in the NBA in general. I take this with a grain of salt, but the only person that actually did, Chris Herring, actually did have Zach LaVine on this list at number 19, but overall, they combined all three lists and put out a top 25, and he wasn't a part of that. Obviously, Chris Herring he likes the Bulls more than I think a lot of other ESPN writers, analysts like the Bulls. He likes what they're doing here. He liked him in Minnesota as well, so you can kind of see that. He was also the one who had Lauri Markkanen really high at number 14. And like you said, it's all about based on opinion. And I think the one thing that worries me the most about LaVine's game right now is the defensive things that we've talked about. And obviously, we continue to just say that's a weakness. And I feel like we've brushed that off a lot. Watching some of the film over the last 2 or 3 weeks, the way LaVine has played, the way he's given up on defensive plays, the way he's looked lost, he doesn't know how to rotate with guys, I just find it very hard to believe that in order for Zach LaVine to be an all-star or to be a superstar in this league, that he's going to have to do something way better than that. Like, I get it. Talking about LaVine's game defensively, I feel like the Bulls are going to have to make up with that with somebody else. So they're going to have to spend money on a guy that you can use as an elite defender to try to cover up LaVine's weaknesses on the defensive end. I feel like that's where he gets knocked around the most nationally. And honestly, it's kind of justified. Like, you go back and look at the film in the first 3 weeks or over the course of the last 6 weeks that LaVine's played in a Bulls uniform, the defense has not been good. It's been brutal. And to take that step, I get it. He's only 22. I get it. He's going into this contract year. But that the defensive liability that LaVine brings to the floor on a starting unit is bad. And I don't think you can get any closer to a championship with him playing at that level. So how do you fix this? Do you try and fix LaVine in terms of his defense, or do you try to hide and cover up that mistake? And was that something that you feel like the Bulls might learn 2 or 3 years down the road, or would you rather have them try and fix it right away?
To me, the most logical answer is that you try to do both. You try to improve Zach LaVine, and you know, whether it's Fred or ideally somebody else on his staff who is more of a defensive specialist, helping LaVine become a better one-on-one defender and a better team defender and a rotation defender and a help defender, all the things that he's really struggling with right now. You try to improve him on that end of the court, and you also, if possible, mask his defensive weaknesses with the players around him on the floor. And that's, you know, you can do that by having a long, talented, versatile backcourt defender like Chris Dunn. I think if those two are going to continue to play together on the court in a system where Dunn's the starting one and LaVine's the starting two, Dunn can make up for some of that. And I think the Bulls, in, you know, best case scenario, as they move forward with LaVine as a big part of their core, they want him to become a better defender. And they also, if we're being realistic, are going to need to have better defenders around him to mask those problems as much as possible.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that LaVine all of a sudden they have to turn his game into a defensive superstar or anything, but I think it's probably pushing the Bulls, if they haven't already thought of this, I'm sure they have, it's probably pushing them more so now looking at the draft to take a wing or potentially two wings in this draft that are defensive players first and sort of try to make up for what they're going to have to do with LaVine. Because then again, like, you talk about him being committed to major money this summer. That's been the entire talk, and that's what the fear is, that the Bulls are going to overpay LaVine and they're not going to get what his value is. In terms of an offensive player, I'm not worried about his streaky shooting right now. I think it's still just trying to get back into the rhythm after an injury, trying to figure out how to play with some of his new teammates in these roles and be successful. I think that's all going to take time, and I'm fine waiting for that. But I think this is going to push the Bulls and put a little bit more pressure on them to not only figure out wings that can help be sort of, I guess, a bridge for LaVine's terrible defense, but also I feel like this summer they're going to have to bring in somebody that's a veteran shooting guard that maybe is defensive-minded first to try and help LaVine with this. I feel like that's the only way I can think of in terms of the way the Bulls can improve his defense, if at all possible. Like, we could even be talking about the possibility that LaVine doesn't even get any better on defense. I get it. He's only 22. He's still super athletic, still super awesome on the offensive side of the ball. But, man, we're talking about bare bones scraps here in terms of Zach LaVine's defensive skills on that side of the ball. I think that's just the biggest, for me, paying Zach LaVine this summer, that's the biggest worry. And it's the biggest worry for a lot of Bulls fans out there. But you look at other guys around this league, the money that they've gotten. Victor Oladipo, he was a two-way player. Like, he was a solid defender coming out of college. He can score the bucket, and he's taken a step offensively to be better in that aspect. There's some other guys. Bradley Beal, not a terrible defender, not a great defender. Really good jump shot. He's going to probably get paid in that type of money. So I guess if I'm talking about 2 or 3 years down the road here, when we're hoping that the Bulls will turn that corner and be competitive, I feel like they're going to have to draft a couple wings. They're going to have to get savvy with their veteran guards on this team and figure out a way to just either brace that defensive weakness from Zach LaVine or try to develop it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that absolutely makes sense. I think Bulls fans are all kind of in the same boat right now as far as worrying about that element of his game and worrying about the paycheck that he'll be earning as he tries to better himself. This week in Bulls history segments for you guys, but before we do that, let us take a quick pause and tell you about one of our Locked On Podcast Network sponsors. Locked On Bulls Nation, listen up. It's time to talk to you about the boatload of money you can make this week betting at MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect time to get in on the action. The madness of March is here. You can lay down some money and score big on these college hoops tournament games. Join me and Jordan and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie. We would only recommend a service that's been this good to me, to Jordan, to everybody at Locked On, to all of our listeners. That's why we urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win and they pay. Fast and without any hassles. Honestly, if you're playing and betting anywhere else during these March Madness games, you're wasting your time. They even have in-game live betting, so you can place bets on these March Madness tournament games after they tip off. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. And you can even enter a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge free. Use promo code LOCKEDONBULLS to activate that 50% bonus offer. Visit MyBookie today. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, now I want to get to this week in Bulls history. Matt, I know you have a couple on your mind already, and there's also a topic that kind of ties into a this week in Bulls history type of conversation that I want to have to you about two certain players of the last 10 years that were pretty significant Bulls players. So I want to have that conversation after you tell me what's going on in this week in Bulls history.
All right, so this is a fun one for you. This game came on March 13th, 1989. So this exact day in Bulls history. The Bulls win against the hapless Indiana Pacers fairly easily. 122-90 was the final score. The reason this game is significant, though, the fastest triple-double in Michael Jordan's great historic Bulls career. He finished the game with 21, 14 assists, and 14 rebounds, adding 3 steals and 2 blocks, but he got the triple-double mark with his 10th assist on a pass to Sam Vincent with 21 minutes played. This was just into the start of the third quarter. 21 minutes. Jordan had 15 points, 11 rebounds, and got that 10th assist. So I believe as of right now, I did some searching and some digging. Right now, it ranks as either the fourth or fifth fastest triple-double in NBA history. It is still the fastest in Bulls history and the fastest of MJ's career. Of course, just last month, speaking of young studs that were part of our conversation in our first segment, Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets in a game in February broke the longstanding record and became the player to record the fastest triple-double in NBA history with just 14 minutes and 33 seconds on the court to get his triple-double, breaking the record that was held by Jim Tucker of the Syracuse Nationals in 1955, who did it in 17 minutes flat. Russell Westbrook, another name that you would probably not be surprised to see on this list, is the currently second fastest. He did it in a game in 2016 in 17 minutes and 46 seconds. So a little bit longer than it took the Jim Tucker of Syracuse Nationals back in 55. Jokic broke both of their records by a lot. But Jordan, in this game in 1989, did it in 21 minutes. And that's still pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, to talk about impressive types of feats. And I thought it's kind of fitting that you bring up Nikola Jokic's quickest time, especially that it just happened a month ago, where he did it with a minute and 54 seconds left in the second quarter. You brought up Russell Westbrook's last year, or I should say about a year and a half ago now, December 2016, where he did it with 34 seconds left in the second quarter. He also had another one in April of 2016, where he did it with 11 seconds in the second quarter. And then if we're going to span all the way back over the last 20 years, which Jordan isn't included in this, April 2005, LeBron did it in 11 with 11 minutes and 37 seconds left in the third quarter. And then Ben Simmons did it in January of 2018, just a few months ago, with 11 minutes and 11 seconds in the third quarter. Pretty cool feat. And I think it's insane that guys could do this, especially in the first half of a game. And obviously big guys, especially guys who can pass like Nikola Jokic can, like, that's pretty insane. And obviously Russell Westbrook's historic season last year, not a surprise that his name's up on the board twice.
There's another interesting one. Kevin Johnson, you know, great Suns player during the 90s, he had a triple-double that he recorded before halftime on February 12th, 1997. So there's another one for you.
All right, Matt, if you want to check out any of our videos from this week's in Bulls history, go to our Twitter page, @LockedOnBulls. We've tweeted out all these videos with recaps, highlights, to get you in your feels today on Tuesday. This week, you kind of need it if you're a Bulls fan heading into this week. We've got a lot of tank games going on, so check out all those videos, @LockedOnBulls on Twitter.
Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
But Matt, the more important thing this weekend kind of brought up a debate, and I'll give our friends over at NBC Sports Bulls Talk. They had this conversation as the Bulls were going on. Derrick Rose, obviously playing in his first game for Minnesota over the weekend, sparked kind of a debate, and this always happens. This is like clockwork here. Derrick Rose, anytime he's brought up on Twitter, I was just telling you off air, like, no matter if it's good or bad, usually gets 200 retweets, 500 likes if you're savvy with what you say on there. Like, Derrick Rose is such a polarizing thing to talk about on Twitter, especially on Twitter. But they brought up a thing where they kind of went back and forth about maybe Jimmy Butler, maybe Derrick Rose. Who do you think was the best Bull in terms of the last 10 years? NBC Sports Bulls Talk Chicago thought that Jimmy Butler is the better player. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty hilarious Twitter storm, because they started it with a pretty disrespectful gif comparing Derrick Rose's Timberwolves debut to that guy in the, you know, 80s or 90s infomercial who's trying to wash his car with 8,000 different products, and he's juggling them all, and then he trips and falls, and like soapy water flies everywhere. It's one of the greatest gifts ever. I love using it. But so some Rose stan out there, you know, quoted it and said, this account is so weak for tweeting this about the Bulls' best player since Jordan. And then Bulls Talk quoted that and came back saying, we did not tweet about Jimmy Butler. So clearly, those folks who run the Bulls Twitter page for the Bulls subcategory of NBC Sports Chicago are on the Jimmy Butler side of that argument. To me, it's hard to have the argument and hard to think through it logically and objectively without the nostalgia for the good old days of what the young MVP version of Derrick Rose was and what it meant to one of the proudest fan bases, not just in Chicago, but really in the world. And this is something you and I have talked about before on this show. Bulls Nation is everywhere, and it is insanely passionate. That's why even during this season, when we have 20 more losses than we do wins, the Bulls are leading the league in attendance. That is a fact, and it's because Bulls Nation is that strong. Derrick Rose, being a Chicago native kid, you know, won a state championship at Simeon. You came from from a Rose that grew between the cracks of cement in one of Chicago's toughest, poorest South Side neighborhoods, and then he has this insanely meteoric rise to being one of the league's best players, and it all comes crashing down in what felt like seconds. And we didn't really ever... We couldn't process that. We didn't have enough time to, you know, to have closure on it. It was, you know, a relationship that ends and you feel like you didn't get the closure you needed. I feel like that's how most Bulls fans feel about Derrick Rose. Whether you started trashing him towards the end of his Bulls years or you didn't, or you defended him, either way, it's still a sore subject. Objectively, who was the better Bull over a longer period of time? It's hard to argue against Jimmy Butler. It really is.
Yeah, I always get weird when we talk about best player, I guess, in the last 10 years. I guess even if you want to stretch it all the way back to Jordan, because none of the players between Jordan or when Rose got picked are ever going to be considered the best player since Jordan. Like, yeah, Ben Gordon was nice. Kirk Heinrich was nice. Luol Deng was nice. Joakim Noah was nice.
That is some gross disrespect to Andres Nocioni, man. Come on now.
I was getting to him after about the 10th Bull, but talk about Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose. If we're just going to compare their two best seasons as players so far, we're talking about Jimmy Butler's season last year in 2016-2017, and then obviously we're talking about the Derrick Rose MVP year in 2010-2011. 22 years old compared to 27 years old. Derrick Rose averaged 25 points, 7.7 assists, 4.1 rebounds. He shot in an efficiency level of 48.5%. His shooting percentage was 44.5%. He was averaging 34% from three, which is actually pretty decent for Derrick Rose in this season. One of the things is he was getting to the line a ton, actually not as much as Jimmy Butler was, but Butler's season in comparison, pretty similar numbers if we're just talking about what's on paper. It's 23.9 points per game. He had 5.5 assists per game and 6.2 rebounds. The shooting percentages are almost identical here, and Jimmy Butler obviously a little bit better three-point shooter at 36.7%. The point I'm trying to make here is if we're talking about single seasons in terms of Derrick Rose's MVP year and Jimmy Butler's year last year, you're also talking about like kind of a transformation in the way the NBA was. I feel like the tipping point of where Derrick Rose won his MVP, wouldn't you say there was kind of a page being turned in the way the NBA was changing and the style it was playing and how guys played in this league? And I feel like it's a little bit unfair to talk about Jimmy Butler and the season that he did have last year as an all-star. You look at those numbers, pretty similar, but what Derrick Rose was able to do at 22 years old and then win the MVP over guys like Dwight Howard, who Dwight Howard had a career year that year. And a lot of people talk to this day that Dwight Howard got snubbed out of that MVP. So, and you're talking about LeBron in his prime too in this season and so many other players around the league. I think it's an unfair comparison. I just feel like there are your Derrick Rose fans, they're your Jimmy Butler fans, and then your Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler fans. And that's kind of where I fall in terms of just what they did on the court and what they did as a Chicago Bull. I'm a fan of both, and I don't really like comparing either one. I would say it's pretty damn close, but I'm probably going to give it to Derrick Rose considering he won the MVP. He took us so close to getting to those NBA Finals. And not to say Jimmy Butler wasn't a part of that. He was. He just didn't have as significant of a role as Derrick Rose did, especially early on, talking about MVP years or those first 3 years, and then we had the injuries happen. So if I had to give it to somebody, and I'm telling you, it's like an eyelash between the two guys. I'm giving it to Derrick Rose because of the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to say who in the post-Jordan era has had the best single season in a Bulls jersey, and you want to give Rose a slight edge to Butler's final year last year because of the numbers and the MVP, I guess you can say that. But really, I mean, so you mentioned in that MVP season, Derrick Rose averaged 25 points and Jimmy Butler averaged 24. Rose averaged two more assists than Butler. Butler, two more rebounds than Rose. Jimmy averaged two steals a game compared to Rose's one. And Jimmy's turnovers was significantly fewer, 2.1 to Rose's 3.4. And you could say, oh, well, that's not a fair comparison. Rose is the point guard, more ball handling. Let's be real. Jimmy Butler was handling that ball an awful lot last season. And as far as shooting percentage, three-point percentage, and true shooting percentage and efficiency field goal percentage, all in Butler's favor. Close, but all in Butler's favor. And as you mentioned, Jimmy had a full two free throw attempts more than Rose did. You go look and some of the advanced stats, defensive box plus minus, edge Jimmy Butler. Value over replacement player, edge Jimmy Butler. Win shares per 48 minutes, edge Jimmy Butler. Total win shares, edge Jimmy Butler. Like, he had statistically, other than scoring one fewer point and having two fewer assists per game, a better season than Rose in his MVP season. So if you zoom out a little bit and say, okay, Rose won the MVP, why? You mentioned some people thought Dwight got snubbed. Some people thought LeBron got snubbed. But that Bulls team went from a 40-win team the previous year to a 62-20 team and the number one seed the year that Rose had that huge jump in his efficiency and how much the Bulls were using him to get their wins on a nightly
basis. I was just going to say, you're about to piss off a lot of really, really strong Derrick Rose fans by saying that Jimmy Butler had a better season last year.
Look, I mean, look at the numbers. Look at Butler's numbers from last season, and basically across the board, statistically, his numbers are better than Rose and Rose's MVP season.
If you have
a pair of eyeballs, you cannot deny that. And as great as Rose was in that MVP season, they had a very still in his prime and not totally worn out Luol Deng, who was crucial on both ends for that team. And still in his prime, Joakim Noah, had a fairly effective, if overpaid, Carlos Boozer, a great bench mob, arguably the best bench in the league that season. So yes, Derrick Rose in that MVP season was great, and he was vital to their 20-win rise and their way to the Eastern Conference Finals. And his rookie season was fun. His second season between being Rookie of the Year and then becoming an All-Star before his MVP season, so many great memories. If you're talking one season, Butler's 2016-17 season statistically edges out Rose. If you're talking longevity, sadly, I think you have to also give that to Jimmy Butler.
Throw this out here. I plugged this into Basketball Reference. Shout out to Basketball Reference because they literally have everything and you can compare players and I love it. I spent hours on this site just comparing players and their stats. And while it doesn't give you the whole picture, it gives you a lot of what happened in terms of the numbers. And so Derrick Rose, through six seasons, played 340 games for the Bulls. Jimmy Butler, through his first six seasons, played 399 games. Obviously, you got to factor in Derrick Rose's multiple injuries in the whole season that he didn't play in. But the numbers kind of speak. I would be curious if you added another season in there with 60 more games and see how it would stack up for Butler and for Derrick Rose. But I think it sort of evens out considering Butler in his first couple years didn't play a whole vital role, especially on the offensive end. But just listen to these numbers. So Jimmy Butler averaged 15.6 points per game, 3.1 assists, 4.8 rebounds, half a block, and he turned the ball over around 1.5 times, where Derrick Rose was 20.4 points per game, had 6.5 assists per game and 3.7 rebounds. He was turning the ball over at a rate of 3 times a game. Shooting percentage, though, was the edge goes to Derrick Rose at 45.2%, where Jimmy Butler's was at 44.8%. So just a slight edge there. Derrick Rose shot 30.4% from three. Jimmy Butler 33.7% from three. Jimmy Butler, in terms of efficient field goal percentage, just a tick higher than Derrick Rose's was. Their both free throw percentage was around 82%. So eerily kind of the similar numbers, but if you actually look at the attempts that were being made per game, Derrick Rose shot at a way higher volume than Jimmy Butler did in his first six seasons. Like, Derrick Rose was the offensive firepower in this, so that's why it isn't the whole total picture, but if you're looking at the first six seasons of the Bulls in terms of Butler's play and Derrick Rose's play, they're pretty similar, but like, you can make an argument for both guys, and you just did. You said you'd give the edge to Jimmy Butler, but I feel like there's a couple other things outside of just what says in the box score that play in it for me, and that's why, like, if you win an MVP, even if you didn't win a championship here, you'll always be remembered, and I think for what Derrick Rose did, even though it was a short time, and we always talk about this, but for what he did for this city for, what, 3-4 years, in especially during his MVP season, I think it says a lot more than I think what Butler did while he was here. While Butler was a fantastic player and a phenomenal guy, it just kind of got overshadowed by the whole Derrick Rose thing. And I think with Derrick Rose also winning an MVP, I think that's just the biggest part of the conversation. If I had to pick somebody that was between Jordan or after Jordan that was the best player, I'm going with Derrick Rose.
I mean, it's like I said, it, you know, it depends on which way you want to take the argument. And if it's over the course of their career in a Bulls uniform, if it's single season, if you factor in, you know, factoring in the MVP, that's fair. If you want to do that, I totally get that. But, you know, when we started this conversation, this debate, I said, as hard as it is for me, I tried to remove any of the nostalgia and emotion that I still have and I still battle with about Derrick Rose, who Derrick Rose was in that the rise to that MVP season and who he became afterward when looking objectively at what those players meant to this Bulls team on the court, winning basketball games in the post-Jordan era. And it's, again, it is not easy for me to do that. My heart wants to say Derrick Rose. It really, really does. When I take a step back and take my heart out of the equation, I'm left with Jimmy Butler being the answer.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so get your questions in on social media or at our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. So remember that. Save that in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Text us your questions for tomorrow's episode. That's 331-979-1369. Send us all your questions for tomorrow. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. We're doing great things over on social media, so make sure you're following us there. Send all of your questions in once again for mailbag segment tomorrow. But for Matt Peck and Jordan Malley, we are out. Have a great night, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.